This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
Excited to bring in our next guest. Not only is he a great dude, Steve Wyche to the NFL Network, but he is someone who is very familiar with the Seahawks and provides a great national perspective, and he joins us now. Steve, I'm grateful for you taking the time and pretty excited to see how these Seahawks fare as they go up against Green Bay. What's most interesting to you about this game?
Well, good morning, guys. And I think, you know, the two things I'm really looking out for is, one, you know, can they block the Packers' defensive front? I mean, we know how good the Packers' defense is. Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Kenny Clark, their interior guys, fantastic. Because Mike Pettine has been fantastic scheming things up this year, their defensive coordinator. So that's the key, especially the protection off of the edges with the Smith brothers, as we like to call them. But also, you know, Seattle's the type of team that can get teams to play their style. They can bog a game down. And, you know, and I'm just like, man, if Seattle goes in there, even if they're down like 20-17 or something in the fourth quarter, they're going to win that ball game because of number three and the fact that so many, the DK Metcalfs, you know, the Tyler Lockett, so many players are stepping up in clutch moments, man. It is amazing to me how year in and year out, Pete Carroll and his staff, they develop players and they develop them over the season so they're playing their best football a year in and year out. At the end of seasons, and that's why I think when I look at all these games this weekend, the one road team I really think has a shot is Seattle.
You mentioned bogging a game down. The Seahawks passing attack has been its biggest strength offensively, yep. I think, of late, especially with the injuries at running back. What are we to make of this Packers secondary? We know about the Smith brothers, as you call them, but that secondary, is it something that Russell Wilson can attack downfield the way that he did against the Eagles this past Sunday?
They're good, man. No, the Packers second. I mean, he can attack them. I mean, Russell Wilson, the simple fact that he can extend plays, I mean, that opens things up. No matter how good, it could be Deion Sanders back there. I mean, if you had a quarterback who can scramble, you go into the scramble rules, receivers can break open. And that's one way that Seattle's always going to be able to have an opportunity to attack a secondary. But the Packers secondary, their corners are very good. They're big. Tremont Williams, you know, he seems like he's 40 years old, but he's still playing elite football because he can run. They've got safeties, Darnell Savage. I mean, they're loaded. They're very, very good, aggressive tacklers. They're very strong at all three levels. But there'll be opportunities just because of some of the things they do scheme-wise, some of the things they do off of play action, and the fact that Russell Wilson can extend those plays.
We're talking to Steve Wyche from the NFL Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Wyche89. That's Wyche. You say Seattle having a chance to win on the road. It's weird to think that it's now the Packers that have a balanced offense with more of a running game, and it's the Seahawks who throw more often, and their defense is a liability. The roles of these two teams, kind of the way they play, has changed dramatically this season.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, that's a great point. But you look around the league, and you look at so many teams that have kind of flipped, you know, with the way they've done. And again, this is a credit to both these coaching staffs to recognize strengths. You know, Matt LaFleur went in there and, you know, I'm sure, look, he comes from the Shanahan, from the McVay systems, where there's a commitment to run the ball and the passing game is set up off the run, whereas before in Green Bay, it was vice versa. And it's working for them. You know, and because you always have the wild card, if everything goes to hell, Aaron Rodgers can make magic happen. But the fact that they're balanced, the fact that it has worked this year, the offensive line has played better because of it, that's huge. And then Seattle, you know, throwing the ball a little bit. They've just kind of been forced to be in the position. But we knew years ago when we saw the transition, when they started getting rid of the Legion of Boom and the Michael Bennett and Cliff Averills of the world, whether retirement or whatever, that this was going to happen. This was going to be Russell Wilson's football team. And that's what it's become. We still know that they're run heavy, but like you said, the injuries to Carson and to Penny, you know, it's kind of forced them to do this. And then the injury to Dwayne Brown, they've really had to commit to the run because the pass protection is not nearly as good. At the same time, man, number three, when you talk to people from around the league, when you talk about the Seahawks, all they say is that guy is the ultimate X factor. He's almost impossible to game plan for. because you know in the final minutes of a game, he has got the potential as much as, if not more than Aaron Rodgers, to make magic happen.
You mentioned number three. I think normally when we talk about the Packers, we talk about number 12. But the person I'm most interested in this game is their new head coach, Matt LaFleur, who helped them go to a 13-3 season. Your NFL Network colleague and former Packer, James Jones, who was on with us earlier, mentioned that he has the team feeling like it's a whole lot more together than it had been in years past. You've been around this locker room before. Do you feel the same way? And what else is different about the Packers this year than it was last year?
Well, I have not been around the team as much as James, but, you know, you think about, we talked about they're running the ball. Aaron Rodgers feels rejuvenated. You can see that the way he's playing with that joy again. He's hopping around. I don't think he's doing the State Farm championship belt thing anymore. He's got a new thing to plug when he's out there on the field. But, you know, I think the fact that, again, they're balanced on both sides of the ball and Aaron Rodgers doesn't feel that he's got to be the miracle worker has just got everybody feeling better. Everybody, but also everybody's more included. You know, this is kind of back in the Super Bowl years when you had, you know, Clay Matthews and Desmond Bishop and Charles Woodson. You know, it was complementary football on both sides of the ball where everybody really felt that they were the piece of the pie, whereas the past couple of years, it's been Aaron Rodgers or bust. So when everybody feels to be a part of something, I mean, I think that leads just to a lot of confidence and a lot more team uniformity than, you know, again, when you've got to rely so much on one or two guys to make things happen.
You want to lead off your day on Sunday with NFL Game Day on the NFL Network. It starts at 8 a.m. Pacific, and it's going to feature Kurt Warner sitting down with Russell Wilson. You'll be able to see that on the NFL Network. Steve Weiss is our guest here. It's on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Steve, one of the things that I'm most interested about in this game is that both of these franchises, for as much success as they've had, and they've both been great throughout the decade. I was looking it up. It's kind of freaky how similar their resumes are in terms of regular season record, playoff berths. They've each won a Super Bowl. There's kind of an underlying question with both teams, though, of did they leave some success on the table? Could Green Bay have won more? Should they have gotten to more than one Super Bowl while having Rodgers at his peak? Should the Seahawks have been able to win more than one Super Bowl, get back to a third Super Bowl with all that Hall of Fame talent they've had? I think it's interesting. It's not necessarily fair that that question exists, but one of those teams is going to get a chance to forever erase that if they get back to the Super Bowl, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, when people say that, oh, man, you know, the Packers should have won more Super Bowls with Aaron Rodgers. Hey, man, there's been a team in the AFC that's been like the Chicago Bulls of the 90s. I mean, the New England Patriots have broken a lot of hearts, right? So, mm-hmm. So you know, that's part of it. But even getting out of the NFC, it's hard. Look at it this year. I mean, we saw last week the Saints, one of the best teams in the NFL. They get knocked off. I mean, the NFC has kind of, you've seen new faces every year because the teams have been so good. And this year they're really top heavy good. They knock each other off. I mean, it is very, very hard to get to Super Bowls and for the Patriots and to take nothing away from them. But they've played in a division that's basically been a layup line for them for 15 years, right? They have not had to struggle like the Seahawks or the Rams or the Niners have had to do in the NFC West year in and year out just to win the division. So, you know, we can sit there and say, man, Seattle should have won more with that team. Seattle's a little different because if they gave the ball to Marshawn, we might not be having this conversation. But it's so hard. And no matter what we think about, hey, this talent is superior, they should have won it. It's so hard. Look, there's the conversation now in New Orleans. How come Sean Payton is not taking the same heat Mike McCarthy has taken for only winning one Super Bowl with the NFL's all-time passing leader and with Drew Brees? It's hard. It's a very, very difficult thing, and that's why playing complementary football and having a balanced team is the best way to get there, regardless of some of the top-end talent you have on your roster.
How big of a deal is it for this Packers team? It's a very young team, much like the Seahawks, that this is the first time that they've been in the playoffs in a while. I mean, it's been since 2016.
It's huge. I mean, you know, this is title town. There are expectations of this franchise, and kind of piggybacking off the last conversation we were having, there were a lot of, you know, diminishing hopes for this team. Like, man, we should have gotten back. We should have been better. So getting back is huge, and the fact that they're playing in Lambeau, you know, the bucket list of all venues in the NFL and the history and everything, new coach coming in, it's absolutely significant, not to mention that they are a nationally branded franchise. When you talk about, you know, the teams that go everywhere, you guys have been in stadiums where Packer fans have taken over, you know, the Packers, the Steelers, some of those teams. So it's huge in so many regards that they're back. But I think the fact that they're playing a team like Seattle and they're playing them in a Lambeau only enhances it. It's a little bit more hot sauce in the jambalaya.
He is Steve Wyche, works at the NFL Network. Steve, first of all, we're really grateful for the time, and we thank you for coming on. And also, as someone who first met you when I was covering the Sonics, RIP, back in the Seattle newspapers, and you were covering the Wizards with the Washington Post, you're one of the great pros. Like, you're one of the great pros in sports media. And I'm really grateful for it. Like, you've been someone who has always been so gracious and kind to younger people. And just thanks very much.
Hey, man, I appreciate the kind words. And Danny, you know, you've always been one of the best. And I've got to give you the W on that one, because the Sonics were a lot better than the Wizards when we first met, brother.
That's true. That is true. That is true. He is Steve Wyche. You can follow him on Twitter and watch for him on the NFL Network. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Take care, guys.
It's interesting that he brought that point up about balance, because maybe I've talked myself in circles, because I find myself thinking, yeah, you know what? The Packers probably should have won more than just one, gotten to more than one Super Bowl with Rodgers at his peak. And you know what? If Mike McCarthy got fired, well, why doesn't Sean Payton take some of the heat? There's a danger in having your team built around the passing game without having a running game as a complement. There's a danger. It's harder. It may be more conducive to regular season success than it is to not winning in the playoffs, but winning three or four straight games in the playoffs, which is what you need to do to get to and win a Super Bowl.
It's how a 15-1 team can lose to the New York Giants, a team that barely made the playoffs in 2011.
And I thought that was their pass rush. Wasn't that because they weren't really a 9-7 team because they had a monster pass rush?
They had an awesome pass rush. That's why Eli Manning has two Super Bowls. They should have won the MVP in both of them, but whatever. That's not the point. The point is that this Packers team has been so reliant on Rodgers for such a long period of time, and it basically demands a perfect game. And the sad thing is, in those games where he has been asked to, I think, make up for, remember against San Francisco when Colin Kaepernick just absolutely bludgeoned them back in 2012?
Yes.
He didn't have a bad game in that game. It's never that he has had an awful, catastrophic, four interception kind of game. It's that he has been average by his standards, and that around him there hasn't been anything. But I am curious about this side of it, that not necessarily the expectations attached to the Packers being back, because obviously this is big for Green Bay, but if you're a young player and you're in the playoffs for the first time, how do you handle this week? And I've been wondering about Matt LaFleur, how prepared he's going to have these guys coming off of a bye week, given some of the issues they've had in preparation earlier this season. I know he said, oh, nothing's changed this year. Oh, it changed after the Chargers game. It changed going into the 49ers game. This is a big game, and I wonder just how focused these guys are going to be coming off of a bye week. It is something that, yes, can be advantageous for a banged-up team, but at the same time, for a young football team that hasn't been in this situation before, they better hope, they better make sure that they are as ready to go as they possibly can, because I could easily see this team coming out sluggish early on, and that would help the Seahawks out a whole lot, because they do the same a lot.
Is Rodgers enough to counterbalance that? Because I kind of agree.
I don't
with
know.
You. And I think you're right about the possibility. It is a young team. They're the fifth youngest team. They will have had 2 weeks off. The idea of that rest versus rust. I can see them coming out and it feeling a little differently when they start going. But I feel like Rodgers is the experienced person, and he's enough to counterbalance that.
True, but he's not. And this is also something I wonder about, and Steve mentioned this just a moment ago. There's like an extra spring, an extra bounce in Aaron Rodgers' step now with Matt LaFleur. Does that mean he's changed who he is in his DNA? Is he now the guy who is going up to everybody a la Russ? All right, let's go, let's go. That just feels like something that's not possible from Aaron Rodgers, given what we know, yes, from afar, yes, more from reading articles than actually knowing Aaron Rodgers. That just doesn't seem like it's part of his personality. I feel like that's going to be a big question, too. Is Aaron Rodgers the kind of guy now without Mike McCarthy here that's just more hands-on and more active in getting these guys all ready to go. And maybe he has to be now because his skills as a player have diminished. Fact. You can't dispute that.
It's Danny Engelon. It sure was weird to see him have 28 incompletions in that game against Detroit. For three quarters, he looked terrible. Just missing throws that you do not normally see. It is Danny Engelon. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
It is an exceptional day. Who is it that says that? Do
it
we know who says it?
Like Russell or Pete.
Oh, really?
But I don't think it is, though.
I kind of hear Sherm.
Oh, it could be Sherm. He would say something like that.
Yeah. Today is an exceptional day.
I'll have to ask our production extraordinaire, the wizard, Howdy, when he comes back. Anyway.
Jess, what do we got?
Well, some bad news for the Vikings. Adam Thielen just can't catch a break. He suffered an ankle injury in practice yesterday. It did require stitches, and Stephon Diggs sat out.
I'm confused.
So a bloody sock game for Adam Thielen.
How do you suffer a cut that needs... Does somebody step on it?
I don't know.
That sounds like it might be the case.
Cleated?
Yeah.
Yeah, it got cleated? That's weird.
That's all I can think of.
Do you think it's going to be like when you had to eat oatmeal for breakfast?
Yeah, you're going to talk trash? That was a difficult 2 weeks. Hey, Danny, I lost like 6 pounds. I'm still trying to get it back. It hurt. Can't wait to wear my mouth guard next season. Not going to happen again.
That's exactly right.
Got to get a... And it looks like Courtney Cronin, who covers the team for ESPN...
She does a great job, by
the way. Yes, she does. She is actually at practice right now, just 1 minute ago, tweeting out that he is at practice and going through minimal stretching. He does not have a helmet. And Stephon Diggs is back. He missed 2 days with an illness.
You know what? Stephon Diggs is kind of a jerk.
He is a complete jerk.
Did you see him freaking out on the sidelines?
What a baby. Ooh, I'm not getting enough targets. Like, he's worse than Odell Beckham Jr., but he doesn't get the criticism.
Your team's ahead.
Right.
Oh, it was... I watched that, and I was like... And Cousins came over to him and kind of reached out and tapped him, so I'm sure it's one of those, hey, just being a competitor. But I was like, that's a bad look. Between he and Xavier Rhodes, who... They can't go to the sideline without one of those two dudes screaming at somebody.
You're totally right. I forgot about Xavier Rhodes having the same thing.
He did it again this week. He was hollering at somebody.
Troy Aikman brought it up. I mean, Cousins has so much on his plate already. And listen, Cousins should be better than he is. But whatever. He is who he is. And he made a great point. Like, Cousins has so much to deal with. And now he's got to deal with this child. Because that's what Diggs was acting like.
Wasn't it Harrison Smith that Rhodes was... Was it
was
two of them?
Yeah,
yes. I think it was Harrison Smith.
Smith seemed annoyed. He was like, dude.
Get out of
like,
my face.
Yeah.
Come on.
Because I think that Rhodes was... Based off of the way Harrison Smith was acting, I'm guessing that Rhodes was making all sorts of excuses, and Smith was like, just do your job, bro. Rhodes is a problem for them. He's not a very good corner.
Out of the playoffs, the 2020 Saints do not have a single quarterback signed for next season.
Wow. Oh, Breeze is a free agent?
Indeed.
Oh,
he
that's
is.
Interesting.
And he's 41.
You got to bring Breeze back. If you're the Saints, like
Breeze
you can't.
Brack.
Breeze back. You got to bring him back. That's not a question, is it? He's not going to get more money somewhere else. You bring him and Taysom Hill back.
I am very curious to see if the Saints can act in a cutthroat way. He is a lot like Tom Brady is to the Patriots. And for Saints ownership to move on from him would be something that is extremely eye-opening. But here's the reality. Down the stretch, the last two seasons, Drew Brees has not looked as awesome as we would like to. And I will specifically point out this year, because it's been different this year. It's just the one game, but he did not look very effective against Minnesota this past...
He's bad in that game.
That's something that... Is it because of the thumb injury, or is it something that you're always going to have to be a little bit nervous about, a 40-year-old quarterback getting to the end of a year?
He looked old in that game. He looked really good in their showcase game before that.
Right.
What was it?
Carolina. They won by like a million.
when he had more touchdown passes than incompletions. Did you just say they need to treat him the same way the Patriots should treat Tom Brady?
I'm not saying they need to. I'm wondering if that's how they will. I'm wondering if they look at him and they're like, wow, I mean, he is arguably the most important sports figure in that city's history, just given what he won for them and the fact that he did it after Hurricane Katrina and changed the franchise out entirely, like Tom Brady. It's going to be real hard for them to move on from him, but they might need to. They might need to. I don't know that they can rely on Breeze being 100% at the end of the year. I mean, this is a guy who only played 8 games, essentially. What was it? 8? 7? 9? I forget. But he missed half the year because of that thumb injury. He comes back and he looks good, but what happens if he plays 16 games?
You ride him until the wheels come off. You ride him until the wheels come
off. What if you draft a young quarterback, you sign him for an extra year, let him play behind him, and you have this beautiful mentor in Drew Brees,
yeah,
and then a young quarterback. I mean, they're not in great position to pick one, and I don't know how heavy quarterback-wise this draft is, but it might be one of those situations.
It's true, Jess, but it's probably a project, and you hope it works out, but, I mean, the Patriots, they've had some good backups. They've also had some bad backups. It's really entirely a crapshoot.
You cannot choose to keep Teddy Bridgewater over Drew Brees. If you you're consigning yourself to, hey, you're going to go 6-10, you're going to go 9-7, somewhere in that range.
Trade for Gardner Minshew.
I feel like Bridgewater is going to end up having a career a lot like Case Keenum, where he ends up moving from team to team and doing adequately, but not impressively enough for anyone to really commit to him.
Speaking of projects, potentially, quarterback Jake Fromm will officially enter the 2020 draft.
Whoever picks him needs to be careful. I don't think that dude's going to do it in the NFL.
I don't either.
Yeah, I would steer clear of him. I would take Eason ahead of him.
You would take Eason ahead of him? Oh, yep. I'm not that crazy.
Yep, I would definitely take Eason ahead of him.
I wouldn't take Eason, period.
Jake Fromm's going to break your heart. Jake Fromm is going to break your heart.
More than Jacob Eason.
Eason, if you choose him in the first half of the first round, God bless you. Like, that's not going to work. You shouldn't choose Eason in a point where he's a make or break
okay
kind of player. And for that reason, I think somebody will talk themselves into Fromm. I think somebody will. I think he's going to go in the first half of the NFL draft. Or first half of the first round of the NFL draft.
That's interesting. He has had a lot of talent around him, too.
Yep.
And that's one of the other things that you got to keep in mind with a quarterback like that. I don't want to say that I look at Georgia quarterbacks and I put a question mark next to them, but it might be fair to do it just the same way we do it with USC quarterbacks.
Well, but USC quarterbacks, there's a stronger track record than there is of SEC quarterbacks. I mean, Peyton Manning, like the number, Dak Prescott's been pretty good, but he wasn't heralded coming out. That was a fourth round pick that they have. When you get those top tier SEC quarterbacks, they should come with a buyer beware sticker.
I agree. I think when you are on a team and you are surrounded by the best talent that there possibly is, it just makes your job so much easier, even if you aren't in the SEC and you're going up against all those good defenses.
Ravens running back Mark Ingram returns to practice after a calf injury.
Oh, his calf.
He had a calf injury that kept him out last game.
Is it a cow now? Is it fully grown? His calf has become a cow.
It's actually regressing. It's back in the womb.
Mark Ingram is a great player for them. The difference between Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson, the biggest difference is Lamar Jackson's got a better defense, and right now they've got Ingram is a workhorse and the perfect complement to the kind of runner that Lamar Jackson is.
Yeah, they need him. I mean, that's how this run works. It's Ingram, Jackson, Jackson, Ingram. They are the dynamic duo. You have Jackson doing all the things that he does on the field, and after the game you have Mark Ingram hyping him up. By the way, I know this is a random side note, but you brought up calf. Do yourself a favor if you're having a down day and look up a picture of a fuzzy Highland cattle calf. It'll make you...
Oh, they're just pure fluff.
They are the cutest.
They're the best.
They are the cutest animals possibly in the entire world. They are adorable.
Think the Ravens, there's any chance they lose this week? Or is it fait accompli that they're advancing through?
I think
there's a lot of questions. Lamar didn't play great in the playoffs last year.
It's Ryan Tannehill, you know? It's that simple. And look,
he's going to be a game breaker this weekend.
I mean, if he is, I will eat my words. But I have such a hard time seeing that happen. And if it's the Ravens defense, Earl Thomas said this, and I thought it was an interesting comment, maybe a little bit of a shot against the Patriots. But he said that the Patriots didn't want to tackle Derrick Henry. And that they're going into this game with the mindset of, we are going to attack him. It's easier said than done. That guy's a load. But if you can keep him from getting to the outside, you can contain Derrick Henry somewhat. And Ryan Tannehill, I don't think he's the one that's going to beat you.
It's Danny and Gallant. The Packers and the Seahawks have almost identical resumes over the past 10 years. And we've got a trophy to award to one of them. The winner of this game, we'll explain next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Good things the Eagles are still in their grace period, right? 5-year grace period after you win the Super Bowl, because it's a mess right now. Doug Peterson, one day after giving his offensive coordinator, Mike Groh, and his wide receivers coach, saying both guys will be back. One day after saying that. One day! Not even a full 24 hours, he's let both go. Saying, quote, after much consideration and discussion, I have decided to make a change at the offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach positions.
I don't understand why that's the move.
Well, it might have something to do with after yesterday's press conference in which he said both guys will be back, he went and met with the owner. So that could have a little something to do with it. I don't know either. I do know what it underscores is the difficulty of what the Packers and the Seahawks have pulled off, is that the Eagles have also been, they've been among the better half of the NFC. The idea of staying relevant and staying good for an entire decade is really hard.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
only Seattle and Green Bay have both pulled it off.
It's incredible the numbers, Danny, that you saw on this as far as what the Seahawks and Packers have been over the last decade. You could not find two teams that are closer in terms of their overall accomplishments.
100 wins for the Seahawks, 9 playoff victories, 8 playoff berths in 10 years, 1 Super Bowl and another Super Bowl appearance. The Packers have 102 victories, so 2 wins more. They also have 2 ties, whereas Seattle has only 1 tie.
Ha!
They've also won 9 playoff games. They've also been to the playoffs 8 of 10 seasons. And they've also won a Super Bowl. They didn't get to a second one, but they have been to the NFC Championship game 3 times. So we're going to give this team a trophy. And it can't be a good trophy, right? Because it's just the best team in the NFC for the past decade. It's not the team of the decade. The team of the decade is the New England Patriots. We all know that. But we'll give them some sort of trophy. And Paul, are you willing to offer
I'm willing to volunteer as tribute. Yes, I have a trophy from my MVP performance in the 2017 Reliant Charity Classic, where inside the NRG Stadium bubble, your boy caught 5 touchdowns, but it was against like high schoolers and other old unathletic members of the media. So it wasn't the most impressive performance, but the trophy is impressive. The trophy looks really cool. In fact, far too cool, if we're being perfectly honest. So yeah, we'll get some like duct tape or something or paper, and we'll draw best team in the NFC over the past decade.
Yes, best team of the NFC in the unpronounceable decade, because you can't say the tens, right? Nobody says the tens.
We're calling it the tens. It was the tens.
No, that doesn't really work. And really, if we're being honest, 20s doesn't work either. Here in the 20s.
The roaring 20s.
Nah, doesn't sound good at all. Doesn't sound good at all. I do like it proclaiming them the king of the NFC, though. The king of the NFC. We're just going to secede from
okay.
that. All hail the king of the NFC.
King in the NFC. Yes.
The other thing that's going on is both of these teams are changing. And I think that that's an essential part of why you stay relevant. That's why you stay good. That's why you don't have a dip like the 49ers had, where the 49ers at the beginning of the decade, they were a great franchise. And while they didn't win a Super Bowl, they got to one, and they were in 3 straight NFC championship games. And then they had to rebuild. The only way that you don't have to go through a rebuilding process is if, as an NFL team, you evolve and you change. Because that's what the Seahawks have done, whether they want to admit it or not, in becoming less of a defensive-oriented team and catering to the strength of letting Russell Wilson command more and more of the offense. It's what the Packers are doing right now as Aaron Rodgers enters the back 9 of his career and they're becoming a more balanced offense. So the changes that these two franchises have made, the way these teams look, it couldn't be more different from how it looked when they met in the playoffs the last time in that 2014 NFC Championship.
It really is incredible. I mean, if you look at the entirety of the Patriots run that they've had, it has been, for the most part, the same Brady Belichick, and there have been some changes along the way with big pieces, Rob Gronkowski or Randy Moss, etc. But for this, these are totally different teams. They're young. Seahawks, the 4th youngest in the NFL going into this season. The Packers, the fifth youngest in the NFL going into this season, and they have just gone in totally different directions. The Packers are now a, hey, we are going to be balanced offensively kind of team. We are going to run, maybe not as much as we throw it, but we are going to make sure that that running game is just as effective as Aaron Rodgers, because we don't think Aaron Rodgers necessarily can carry it on his shoulder anymore. And now, I mean, with the Seahawks injuries that they have suffered offensively, it is, hey, Russell Wilson, throw it 20 yards downfield to win this game, to DK Metcalf. That's what they've become. And the defense, it's there, and hopefully will be better on Sunday.
Yeah, it does need to be better, or either that or it needs to snow a whole bunch and make it tougher for Aaron Rodgers to pick them apart. The other part about the between the two conferences, the AFC hasn't been as good as the NFC, right? Taken as a whole, you've got one dominant team. They've won that division 15 straight years, which is absurd. Who's the second best team in the NFC over the past 10 years? Because in the NFC, the Seahawks, the Saints, and the Packers have all won 100 or more games. I think the second best team in the AFC over the past 10 years is the Steelers. And they haven't been to a Super Bowl since 2010.
They did themselves in by losing to New England as many times. I think you could make a strong, compelling case for both the Baltimore Ravens and for the Denver Broncos, but it's only a Super Bowl title apiece for each, and Denver has fallen off so hard in the last couple of years too. So Pittsburgh probably is the team that you put in there, but I think just based off of the playoff performances, you also have to like put Baltimore and Denver right beneath Pittsburgh.
Yeah, seeing exactly how these teams stack up. I'm most interested. This is going to change the way history's not going to decide this game. There's nothing about how Seattle has played when Russell Wilson entered this that's going to determine this game. But the one thing it will determine is how we talk about it. How we talk about Russell Wilson, how we talk about the Steelers or the Seahawks, and how we talk about the Packers is going to be greatly influenced by the outcome of this game.
And I think especially how they talk about it. I mean, how are they going to talk about Russell Wilson versus Aaron Rodgers? If Russell Wilson is able to improve to 2-0 in playoff games against Aaron Rodgers, that is something that people are going to look back on when we go to the 10, 15 year from now conversations. Well, who's the best quarterback of the 2010s? Well, back in the day, my wee lad, there are a couple of big important games between these two. And Russell Wilson somehow, even with a four interception performance, was able to make it happen. It is noteworthy, though, that in these games between the two, Rodgers has played better. He has played better in the seven games between the Seahawks and the Packers. I don't think that's going to necessarily be the case on Sunday, but I also could see Russell Wilson in a heroic and noble losing effort outshining Rodgers, but still the Seahawks not being able to get it done. It's going to be fascinating.
If the Seahawks are going to win this game, Wilson has to outplay. And that was made clear to me last weekend. Wilson's going to be the one that's going to have to be the difference maker. Everything he had to do to make it happen, the fact that he converted five third downs of 10 yards or more in that game against the Eagles speaks to everything. There's nothing that's easy for this team. It is incredibly difficult, and it's going to require a lot. I mean, he's going to have to certainly outplay Rodgers in this game. I think the Packers can win this game without Rodgers having an extraordinary game. I do not think the Seahawks can win it without Wilson playing extraordinary.
Yeah, I think that the odds of Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer, the guys that I think can be very effective in making it difficult for Za'Darius Smith to have the kind of impact that he had, especially against the Vikings passing attack, their offensive line, Kirk Cousins, a couple of weeks ago. I feel like they can keep him off balance, but you're right. It's all about Russ. What is Russ going to do in this game? He's got a tall task in front of him. This Packers defense is better than you would expect, especially in years past. Historically, they have changed from what they used to be, where they used to be soft. They used to not be very good. Well, this year they are good. I don't know how good, and I think we're going to find that out on Sunday because, let's be honest, this is a Packers defense that really hasn't played a whole lot of good teams this year.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to raise flags and then turn it over to the professor. That's all ahead here. 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
You notice what happens in the playoffs. Now they've got Big Brother on the sideline. Like Big Brother on the officiating
Big
crew.
Big Brother?
Yes. The guy that came in and told Tony Corrente, you cannot award that touchdown.
Just grabs him, like touches him on both sides of the shoulders. No,
yes.
We can't do that.
Pushes him away from the player and says, like, hey, because you know what had happened. Well, actually, I don't know this for sure. It's just my wildly, I would say educated guess, that that guy's got an earpiece back to New York, and he's carrying out whatever the people, the head brain trust and Al Riveron's offense tell him to do, or at his office tell him to do. Yeah, they've got Big Brother on the sideline now.
Okay, well, someone is going to need to do what that one lady with the spear does in that Apple commercial from 1984. Got to take him out.
Yeah.
Wow, just... that was a reference. That was a reference.
One lady does with
deep
that spear.
Pool. 1984.
I mean, you guys seen that commercial? It's an iconic commercial.
Before I was alive. No.
Doesn't matter. I mean.
Oh, okay.
I guess it was before Paul was alive.
Not going through
too.
Commercial databases from before I was alive.
Oh, well, I took a class where you had to study this commercial. Yes, this is like one of the most iconic commercials ever. 1984's Apple commercial.
Oh yeah, where it's the science fiction one.
Yeah,
reference to the yeah.
A reference to the 1984 movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
/ book. Jeez.
We're all uneducated.
Yes.
Get with it.
We are.
Get with
we are
this random
you.
Commercial from 30 plus years ago. God.
Jess, do you have any flags?
Yeah, I'm going to raise one, and we didn't get a chance to play this audio today, but thank you to the Seahawks for tweeting it out. I'm going to raise a flag for Marshawn Lynch for being as funny as ever. He and Travis Homer and Robert Turbin were sitting on the bench together, and he couldn't stand sitting next to Turbin.
You can't let me in, so it's too much age between. You got to sit and break up the age.
He got to get some of this game. All right. Don't that feel better? I felt like we was in a senior citizen home. And you are a little youngster, come through the old folk home. Come check on me and Turbo, make sure we all right.
That's
like
funny.
That's without him knowing the cameras are rolling or the mic is on, and he is just like that all the time.
He is an entertaining dude. I love Marshawn.
He's the best.
Lydia.
I'm going to throw a flag on myself. You know, a classic Lydia Cruz flag.
Lydia. So Lydia.
I'm going to take away your flags.
Yeah, it's just classic of me today because there was no show open today due to some technical errors. And then I subjected you all to, like, my weird singing, which
happened. I liked it, though. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no open for the show built into it.
Yeah,
so I'm cringing for you guys.
Thank you so much.
Danny and Gallant.
I will raise a flag for that.
Yeah, I'm gonna raise a flag for that too, Lydia. That was fantastic.
Everyone should throw a flag.
I wanted us to get out of the chorus and into the actual verses. Like, come on.
I'll go to work on that.
All right, yeah. Cool. Honestly, we can replace the open with the Lydia open.
I would prefer to hear Lydia rap.
Ooh.
I would prefer to hear her drop bars.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks for thinking.
Spit a verse, Paul.
I'm going to throw a flag at our country's fascination with the Royals.
Oh, you did it. I told you not to.
Don't care. I do not care. Because guess what? We won independence so that the lucky you-know-what club and their limey dynasty couldn't impose their tyranny on us anymore. And the British, that crown, and I'm actually being serious here, that crown symbolizes oppression of pretty much all of my ancestors. The Irish, the Scottish, the French Canadians. So the Longshanks dynasty or whatever you are, you can kick rocks. It's fantastic that an American just made one of them leave their actual family and their country. Yeah, I hate the people that are obsessed with this because I don't get it. I just don't get it. So am I possibly taking a shot at Stacey? Possibly. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I don't get why people care about the Royals. They do nothing. They are completely worthless, useless figureheads.
Danny, this sounds right up your alley.
It does, and in fact, it sounds similar to something I wrote on Facebook after Meghan Markle married whichever prince it is, the prince that looks like Carson Wentz is what I know him as.
Harry.
And I said that this is the perfect example of how far England has fallen, that one member of their royal family marries a star of an off-brand sitcom.
A USA television show.
That airs on a cable network.
Oh,
now you're encroaching on Stacey. She's going to come in here firing fists.
And here's what I was told. One of my sweetest cousins, Sarah O'Neill, now Sarah Cornwell, emailed me and said, hey, be careful. O'Neill Cousins went to high school with Meghan Markle, and she was taught by your Aunt Candy. And Meghan Markle did go to school at Immaculate Heart in Los Angeles, where my Aunt Candy, who says that she was one of the nicest, sweetest people, and I immediately realized what a gigantic jerk I was.
Meghan did nothing wrong.
Yeah, at all. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, I don't like the royals. Who cares? They're harmless. It doesn't matter.
Well, I like that Meghan is taking them slowly apart. I think it's fantastic. This is the American way. We're going to take down the royal family as well.
I'm pretty sure they're unraveling themselves and she's just recognizing it. Like, this ain't all that cool.
You would be a royal if you could, Paul.
Well, who wouldn't? Who
wouldn't
be a royal if they could? But the thing is, I'm like, right now, I look at the royals and I'm like, they are completely worthless. Like, what do they do? There is nothing that a royal has done in the last 100 years that means anything. Anything.
They don't have to.
Wow, that one guy made a speech before World War II? When he could have had something done about World War II, I don't know, like 3 years in advance instead of all the appeasement stuff that they were doing?
Is that the Duke of Windsor? There's some show on that.
I don't know, the Duke of the Shire or the Duke of Worcestershire.
The Shire is not. The Shire is Hobbit.
Yeah,
I don't believe there's actually
the Duke of Winterfell,
That's something entirely different as well.
The Earl
it's the
of
Duke of Windsor you're referencing.
No, I refuse to acknowledge them. They're phonies. They're
Come
frauds.
On, they've had a lot of weddings.
Congrats.
This lends itself to my flag, which is, I'll just say this. Those who live in glass houses of references to musicals or movies about cats ought not throw stones about the utility of royals. It's on you, Paul.
That's a great musical. I'm sorry that I am Mr. Mistopheles and that you are McCavity. We can't help
nobody
it sometimes.
Nobody gets it.
Yeah,
nope.
I know.
Nobody gets it.
The three
so
people that do, though.
Coming in hot with that 1984 commercial-type reference right
oh, yeah.
now.
Throwing a hammer at the screen and
Got
taking
him.
Y'all down.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I like musicals. I don't want to ever hear Cats referenced on Danny and Gallant ever again.
Well, now that's like a challenge. So.
Well, I'm going to come up with some sort of if it is referenced again.
Is there a punishment?
I don't think there's going to be a punishment. I think I'm just going to ignore and like talk for 15 minutes straight after that.
Oh.
And I will steamroll you. Maybe that's
filibuster. Let's go.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I would actually I would love to hear this filibuster.
It will be awkward for everyone. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you to Lydia Cruz and Jessamyn McIntyre. Really appreciated our guests. It was fun to talk to James Jones and Steve Weiss
awesome.
Of the NFL Network. And
Jay Keeps, too.
Jay Keeps filling in admirably. We're going to talk to you tomorrow at 7 as we get set for this playoff game.
Later.